Welcome. You've got mail.
Fantasy, reality, click, 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 do what I please. Hit me with my sidekick, never been a side chick. Always been a white feet, never been a safe pitch. Oh, it's a princess ting, the age of 14, I was wearing rings, making Zanga things with my Dell PC, memorizing codes, it's so amazing. HTML, in my sleep, binary codes, breakfast I eat, porn, sexy girls with a dream, said I dream. And this is the life of 2014, invisible cage of the MySpace age, hooked on for hours, place for place. Digital rage, it's my digital sage, digital junk, go page for page.
Confessions of a cyber girl, escaping out the matrix world.
Hello, this is Bethany with Teen Beat. I've got articles from the Teen Vogue and 17 websites. Stay tuned to hear about Cameron Boyce and Claudette Colvin and more. Today's music is Cybico by Princess Nokia. Cameron Boyce on Descendants, Diversity in Hollywood, and Growing Up. This is by Gabe Bergato of TeenVogue.com, published on the 20th of October. Cameron Boyce likes to say he's in the active pursuit of myself. Since wrapping up Descendants 2 and graduating high school earlier this year, he's had some time to reflect and figure out what he really wants to do going forward. And while he definitely wants to continue acting, he's also keen to explore other creative endeavors, like writing poetry or photography. I think every child actor has that moment where they're like, okay, I'm not the same person that I was, and you guys need to see me as something different, he told Teen Vogue. I thought about sort of like not escaping, but transitioning out of that mold for a long time. The 18-year-old actor first kickstarted his career as a youngster with a number of roles on things like Eagle Eye and a General Hospital stint even before the age of 10, only to become a Disney Channel powerhouse. He was on the network's beloved Jesse as Luke Ross and shined as Carlos, the son of iconic Disney villainess Cruella de Vil, in the first two Descendants movies, which has become one of the most popular franchises among young people. More recently, he's taken up philanthropy causes, specifically with the Thirst Project. It's an initiative to bring clean water to underdeveloped countries. The teen actor has raised over $27,000 in 40 days. For him, he said it was a no-brainer to use his platform, including the 6 million followers he has on Instagram, to start making a difference. Even though he's growing up, he has plenty of fond memories of his time on Disney Channel so far when he looks back. There's one time on the Jesse set where he remembers jumping on his co-star Karen Brar's back and causing a ruckus. Another moment when Debbie Ryan brought marshmallow blasters for everyone and the cast erupted into a full-out confectionery clash. And, of course, there's the Descendants movies that have High School Musical mastermind Kenny Ortega behind them. The first one brought together Cameron, Sophia Carson, Boo Boo Stewart, and Dove Cameron as the children of classic Disney big bads who got the opportunity to attend Auradon Prep, the sparkly, happily ever after school for good kids. The quartet eventually ditched their original plan of stealing fairy godmother's magic wand once they learn that they don't need to follow in the steps of their parents. Descendants captured the hearts of viewers everywhere, and Descendants 2 proved the movie's pull. It drew an audience of 21 million for its premiere. Cameron figured that a lot of people would watch it, but he didn't quite understand the full scope of it until the movie actually came out. It's something he never really thought would happen to him, having his face on a billboard in the middle of Times Square. And he's quick to give thanks to all the fans that helped make it as epic of a success as it has been. While there's yet to be an official word about a third movie, it's clear that many fans and the cast members are wishing upon a star for it to happen. Cameron even has a pitch for the Disney Channel for what would happen. I want the barrier to come down on the aisle so the parents come to Auradon and we have an epic duel between the kids and the parents, he said. That would be ideal. That's my dream. The magical world of Disney princes, princesses, and villain offspring isn't the only place Cameron wants to break down walls. Where else is he hoping for some change? Hollywood. Cameron's biracial. On social media, he's talked about his mother, who is of Jewish descent, and how impactful it was visiting the Anne Frank House. And for Black History Month in 2016, he brought a spotlight to his grandmother, Joanne Boyce, who was one of the Clinton 12. She was one of the 12 Black teens that attended the first integrated public high school in the South following the U.S. Supreme Court's Brown v. Board of Education ruling in 1954. He's clearly proud of his roots, but it's been interesting navigating being a young actor when people can't exactly put you in one box. He's been the son of Michelle Monaghan, who's white, Salma Hayek, who's Latina, Wendy Raquel Robinson, who is Black, and Paula Patton, who is biracial like him. So it's been a bit all over the board over the years. There's a lot of people in Hollywood who don't look like me or don't have similar features like me, he said. When it's a lead role, it's very hard to come by. We sort of are working to change that. That is something that is important to everyone of color, a minority. It's very important for people to not only see in Hollywood and feel represented, but also sort of even the playing field a bit. And he points to some of those shifts in the industry right now, including Riz Ahmed's recent Emmy win. The actor became the first man of South Asian descent to nab the esteemed award. But we got to keep it going because Hollywood is still really, really white, he said. We got to fix it, and we're doing good. As for what's next for Cameron, there's some things in the works, but he kept mum about the details. But right now, he's glad to have some time off this year to step back and just reflect on everything. That was an article about Cameron Boyce. 17.com tells us 9 things you should know before getting your first body piercing. This is by Elizabeth Denton, and it was published on October 23rd. It doesn't matter how old you are or what you're getting pierced. It's important to pay careful attention to how you get a piercing and who does it. If you don't, there could be scary and dangerous consequences. Here's exactly what you need to know before you get a piercing. Number 1, it's important to find a reputable ear piercing specialist. No, your overly excited BFF is not, in fact, a professional. As easy as it might look on TV or in The Parent Trap, you really have to see a licensed piercer to get your ears or anything else pierced. You'll see why in number 2. Austin-based dermatologist Dr. Ted Lane recommends getting pierced by your doctor or at a tattoo parlor since you can be sure they have the proper training. Most, if not all, tattoo parlors do piercings too. That's because improper piercing could lead to permanent and disfiguring scarring and the formation of cysts underneath the skin, he says. If you prefer to go to Claire's at the mall, the company's public relations and events specialist, Jessica G. Ortiz, assures that Claire's techs have all received required training to pierce your ears. Ask questions first. Ask the piercing specialist what they will use to pierce, how it is cleaned, how long have they been doing it, and if they have had any complications, advises Dr. Lane. Don't feel like you're being difficult by asking too many questions. Seriously, it's a hole in your body. Ask all the questions you want. The piercing specialist should sterilize the gun after every piercing. Regardless of where you decide to go, the tech should clean the piercing gun properly. Certified tattoo and piercing parlors have an autoclave machine, which uses high temperature and steam to sterilize the gun. At Claire's, the store's specialist uses an ear-piercing instrument that's sterilized before and after each use. If the gun is not cleaned correctly, there's a risk of bacterial, fungal, and viral infections, advises Dr. Lane. So it's important to ask when and how the tool your tech uses is cleaned, and make sure you see them clean it. You can get a hypoallergenic earring. Many people are allergic to different metals, most often nickel. So if you know you're allergic or just know certain metals and jewelry makes you itchy, make sure you tell the tech before your piercing. They can use a nickel-free ring, so you won't have any scary reactions. The piercing will hurt, but only for a second. Of course, it's a bit intense. There's a needle going through your skin. But it really only hurts for a second, and then you'll forget about it. If you're nervous or afraid you might faint, make sure you tell your piercer so you can lie down if you need to. It will probably be sore for a few days. While the instant pain from the piercing will go away quickly, you will have some mild pain and soreness, redness, and swelling for 24 to 48 hours after, plus for another 1 to 2 days afterward when you apply pressure to it, such as when you sleep on your side. If the redness and swelling increases after the first couple of days or reoccurs after the piercing, then there may be an infection, warns Dr. Lane. In that case, head to your doctor. You might get a scar. African Americans and people between the ages of 10 and 20 have a higher risk for keloid scars, lumpy and raised skin patches that are basically excess scar tissue. Additionally, anybody who has scars that have not healed well in the past should be careful with piercings, says Dr. Lane. Keloid scars aren't exactly dangerous, but you might not like the way they look, and they could be itchy. Before you leave, make sure to learn exactly how to care for your piercing afterward. In addition to answering your questions, you should receive cleaning instructions that you really have to follow. This will keep the area from getting infected. Both Dr. Lane and the specialists at Claire's recommend you continue cleaning the area a few weeks longer than the standard 6 weeks some places recommend. If there's any increase in swelling, drainage, pain, or warmth, go see your doctor right away. Nose piercings have a few extra risks. All piercings have risks, but there are different concerns when cartilage is pierced, such as the nose or upper ear, because infections involving cartilage are more serious. Dr. Lane advises you pay extra attention when you clean the area afterward. That was 9 things you should know before getting your first body piercing. You're listening to Teen Beat with me, Bethany, your reader on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This article is from 17.com. It was written by Carol Walgren and published on October 19th, 2017. It's titled, Shocking Things About Toxic Shock Syndrome. Okay, we know you probably don't read the side of the tampon boxes for fun, but still, you've probably noticed a warning on there about the risk of toxic shock syndrome from using superabsorbent tampons. And you may have heard about the girl who almost died after accidentally leaving a tampon in for 9 days. So, what exactly is TSS, and should you swear off tampons to keep yourself safe? Here's what you need to know about this scary AF condition. It's caused by a bacterial infection. Your body, including your vag, is basically teeming with bacteria at all times, and most of the bacteria are totally normal and helpful. But when a specific type of bacteria called Staphylococcus aureus overgrows, it can release toxins that cause your blood pressure to plummet. Your organs don't get enough oxygen, and if you don't get to a doctor fast enough, it can be fatal. But it's not just from tampons. It can be linked to infected burns, insect bites, or wounds, which means guys can get it too. But tampons are linked to about half of all TSS cases. A superabsorbent tampon left in the vagina for a long period of time may serve a breeding ground for the staph bacteria that can ultimately end up in the bloodstream, leading to TSS, says Sherry Ross, MD, a gynecologist and author of Sheology. The symptoms can be tricky to spot. It's easy to mistake the early symptoms of toxic shock syndrome, fever, vomiting, muscle aches, headache, and diarrhea, for a run-of-the-mill viral infection. So how can you tell the difference? A sunburn rash, which appears on the palm of the hands and bottom of the feet, is a hallmark characteristic of TSS, Dr. Ross says. If you notice the rash, head to a doc immediately. Symptoms can progress quickly, but a doctor can typically treat it with aggressive antibiotics. But really, anytime you notice flu-like symptoms, and it's that time of the month, it's worth giving your doc a call just to be on the safe side. And take out your tampon, obviously. TSS is super rare, but don't disregard it. TSS is so rare that some gynos might go their entire career without handling a single case, but you still need to take steps to protect yourself. Even though TSS is rare, when it does happen, it can be life-threatening, Dr. Ross says. It's important to know the signs and symptoms associated with this unpredictable and potentially fatal disease. But you can take simple steps to prevent TSS. The best way to reduce your risk of developing TSS, change your tampon every 48 hours, and don't use a higher absorbency than you need. Supers are fine on heavy flow days, but wearing them on light days and just leaving them in longer isn't the best idea. If you use a menstrual cup, don't leave it in longer than 12 hours. And if you're planning an epic night's sleep, you might want to stick to a pad. But don't stress too much about TSS. It's scary, but as long as you stick to the guidelines, you'll be just fine. That article was Shocking Things About Toxic Shock Syndrome. Claudette Colvin explains her role in the civil rights movement. This is by Ronnie Jacobson of TeenVogue.com, published on the 19th of 2017. On March 2nd, 1955, 9 months before Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat to a white passenger on a bus in Montgomery, Alabama, Claudette Colvin, a 15-year-old black teenager, did the same thing. Parks is remembered for having sparked the Montgomery bus boycott, which Colvin helped end more than a year later when she, along with co-plaintiffs Mary Louise Smith, Aurelia Browder, and Susie McDonald, served as witnesses in Browder v. Gale, a case that ended segregation in public transportation not just in Alabama, but eventually all across the United States when the Supreme Court affirmed the ruling. Parks became an icon of resistance. Meanwhile, Colvin became an outcast, branded a troublemaker within her community after her initial arrest and conviction. She was abandoned by civil rights leaders when she became pregnant at 16. Although she has gained recognition in recent years, a book about her life won the National Book Award in 2009. Colvin is still largely glossed over by history, and her immense contribution and sacrifice has never been officially recognized by the U.S. government as Parks was. Teen Vogue spoke with Colvin, now 78 years old, at her home in New York and by phone, about her experiences. The following is a condensed and edited version of those conversations. Teen Vogue says, "Tell us about the day of your protest." Claudette Colvin says, "I was in 11th grade. It started out a normal day. We got out early and 13 of us students walked to downtown Montgomery and boarded a city bus on Dexter Avenue, exactly across the street from Dr. Martin Luther King's church. As the bus proceeded down Court Square, more white passengers got on the bus. In order for this white lady to have a seat, 4 students would have to vacate because a white person wasn't allowed to sit across from a colored person. So the bus driver asked for the 4 seats, and 3 of the students got up. I remained seated. History had me glued to the seat. Harriet Tubman's hands were pushing down on one shoulder, and Sojourner Truth's hands were pushing down on the other shoulder. I was paralyzed between these two women. I couldn't move. February was, at that time, only Negro History Week, not History Month, but the faculty members at my school said we are going to do the whole month because African Americans, at that time we called them Negroes, were deliberately kept out of American history. The boys liked to talk about Jackie Robinson breaking the baseball barrier. My instructor talked about Sojourner Truth and Harriet Tubman. We started talking about the injustice and how we were discriminated against locally. That's why I was so fired up and so angry when the bus driver asked me to get up. It was more than just myself. Some white students on the bus were yelling, "You have to get up, you have to get up." And a colored girl, one of the students, said, "Well, she don't have to do anything but stay black and die." We were still on our best behavior, taking all the insults from the white passengers. The bus driver knew that I wasn't breaking the law because those seats were already for colored people. Under Jim Crow law, the bus driver could ask you to give up your seat at any time, but the problem was that the number of seats for black and white people had to be even. He drove the bus about 4 stops, and when we stopped, traffic patrol got on the bus and asked me to get up. I told him I paid my fare and said, "It's my constitutional right." The patrol officer yelled to the bus driver that he didn't have any jurisdiction here. What happened after that? We thought it was all over with because the white woman remained standing and I remained seated. I knew she wasn't going to sit opposite me. He drove 1 block, and that's when the policeman from the squad car came in and asked me the same thing, and I was even more defiant. I don't know how I got off that bus. All the students said they manhandled me off the bus and into the squad car. They handcuffed me, booked me, and then instead of taking me to a juvenile detention center, they took me to city jail. That's when terror came down. I became very frightened. They didn't allow me to have a phone call, and I didn't know that the students were going to go and tell my parents. My mother and my pastor can't come down and bail me out. I had 3 charges, disorderly conduct, violating segregation law, and assault and battery. They dropped 2 charges and kept the 1, assault and battery. They said I scratched the policeman because I didn't get up and walk, but I don't recall scratching him. So you were convicted of assault and battery of a police officer, a felony? Is that still on your record? Yes, I was put on indefinite probation. How has that impacted your life? That arrest changed my whole life. I was ostracized by people in my community and professional people also. I wanted to be an attorney. My mother would say I never stopped talking. I always had a lot of questions to ask, and I was never satisfied with the answer. A lot of things I wasn't satisfied by. What was your relationship with Rosa Parks? I first met her maybe 2 weeks after I got arrested. Mrs. Parks got in touch with my parents. She had a youth group and said that the youth group would like to hear my story. That summer, I became secretary of the youth group, and in the fall, I took over when the person in charge left for college. We would meet every Sunday afternoon. Rosa would discuss discrimination in Montgomery. You were dropped by the movement after the trial as a young single mother. Do you ever feel like you don't get enough credit? For instance, the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History refers to your contribution in passing as a test case, when in fact you played a pivotal role in the case that helped crumble segregation. I was glad that Rosa did it, and that people were at last going to stand out. It was important to have Rosa as a face that they could rally around. All 4 of us didn't get enough credit. Mary Louise Smith, who was 18, was arrested too. I was a little disappointed at being left out because the whole movement was about young people saying we want more from America. We want to stand up and be first-class citizens. The discrimination that's going on, whether gender or racial, whatever, religious, we want it to be brought out and defeated. Can you tell me more about the period after your arrest and conviction? How did the people in the community react? Some people, the students, were sympathetic at first. They knew my mindset and what I was thinking, but their parents persuaded them not to be involved with me because I was a troublemaker and this wasn't the right thing to do. They already thought I was crazy. Before then, in the 10th grade, I had stopped straightening my hair. I was wearing my hair naturally, and they started saying I was crazy for doing that. They didn't know I would go to the extreme and disobey the bus driver. This was in the 1950s. That's so ahead of its time, especially considering natural hair is still labeled unprofessional today. Everybody was really, really upset if their hair wasn't straight. A lot of African-American women wanted to emulate white women. But I said in my mind, rationally thinking, there's no way you were going to get your hair that straight, especially in the summer. By the time I straightened it, I wanted to go out and play and run. It would go back anyway. I lost a lot of friends because of that. Because their mother and fathers, the only work they had was working for white people, and they didn't want to lose those jobs. That's the main thing. I didn't know about depression, but I became a little depressed. I lost all my friends and really needed someone. I got pregnant in July, and I went back to school in September. I began showing around 4 months after I was pregnant. I was expelled from school around the Christmas holiday. My principal told me not to come back. So, Browder v. Gale, tell me about your role in the case. You were the star witness. What was going through your mind when you were on the witness stand? Were you nervous? Did you rehearse what you would say beforehand? I was afraid, but as I got on the stand and started to look around, I realized that I might as well get involved. I gained strength from the audience when I was testifying. Attorney Fred Gray, the young civil rights attorney representing Claudette, didn't go over the questions beforehand. I didn't rehearse. I just wanted to expose to white people what I was going through and how African Americans were treated. We were second-class citizens, and there was no cause for it, just because they think that they are superior. Afterwards, people were congratulating me, and I wondered what they were congratulating me about. I hoped that I did some good. That was Claudette Colvin explains her role in the civil rights movement. That's all for this week's Teen Beat. I'm your broadcaster, Bethany Williams. Thanks for tuning in to Sun Sounds of Arizona. My digital stage, digital junk, go page for page. Confessions of a cyber girl, escaping out the matrix world. It's a war and I'm winning, let me live the life I did in the beginning. Confessions of a cyber girl, escaping out the matrix world. It's a war and I'm winning, let me live the life I did in the beginning. Let me live the life I did in the beginning. Let me live the life I did in the beginning. Let me live the life I did in the beginning. Let me live the life I did in the beginning. Let me live the life I did in the beginning. Let me live the life I did in the beginning. Goodbye. I was a little bitch, got a fucking weirdo. I quit in the club and I was in the earlobe. Read my books and I don't do drugs. Like a mother's love, I'm selling the stuff. They think too much and I live in the matrix. I just say the truth and I see different faces. Dimensions, they ain't even mentioned. I can read the space anytime, no question. If I try hard, I can move with my mind. Gonna meditate until I gravitate. Get my liver state into a higher place.